Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. It looks like we're finally going to see some spring weather, so if you haven't done it yet, now's the time to get the pruning done. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. We'll talk to him about what plants should be pruned and correct methods of doing it. It's also a good time to think about how your garden looks in the winter and how you might plant to give some visual interest all year long. Jeff always has some great suggestions for plants, and he just got back from Costa Rica, so we'll talk with him about that as well, the lucky Steph. Do you have questions about pruning? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, and you can always post photos on those emails as well. So, Jeff, good to see you.
Good to be here, Larry. Good to be here. I think spring has finally shown itself, which is certainly a nice change of pace, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. You don't look too tanned for just being back from Costa Rica.
Well, you know, I try to stay out of the sun a little bit, but it was certainly nice to soak up all that heat and know that there's something green in the world somewhere.
Well, here we are in the middle of March. Isn't it getting a little late for pruning? Or
well, actually, you know, we prune anytime the plants are still dormant, so it's actually a really good time to prune. You know, if you have a lot of pruning to do in your garden, like we do at Olbrich, we're pruning all winter long.
Yeah.
But this time of the year is almost perfect because the wounds heal when the plants are growing actively. So you're sort of making the wounds now. And then as soon as the plants start growing, they're already starting to heal themselves. So no, this is perfect time. And dormant pruning is much preferred by our staff and others because of you know, less chance for disease and that sort of thing. And you can see the plant really well. You can, you know, when you have leaves on a plant, it's really hard to see everything and make proper, you know, the proper cuts. And so no, it's certainly not too late. Our staff is out enjoying the warmer weather and pruning in all parts of the garden. You'll see piles all over the place at Olbrich right now.
I'm trying to think if you guys have any oak trees.
We do. We do. And of course, as you know, those are the oaks and elms are the first ones we make sure are done because we don't want to spread oak wilt or Dutch elm disease. So is the cutoff still April 15th, I think, somewhere around there?
Yeah, I'd still get it done before then.
Yeah, right. Every year is different as we experience these days. But yeah, always want to get them done, you know, early so we don't have that problem haunting us.
You know, one of the things, when I've pruned, sharp comes to mind. One of the first thing I think about is having sharp instruments to doing the pruning.
It makes life so much easier. And in this day and age with, you know, all the technology we have still, we typically use pruners on our belt and a nice pruning saw. And the blades now are very much advanced. They're real high in carbon, so they hold a really nice edge. And in days of old, the old pruning saws, they would only cut when you pull them, and now they have what they call turbo blades, so they cut both on the push and the pull, so you're doing about half the amounts of, you know, strokes when you're getting through. And it's amazing how sharp, if they're sharp, how well they work. But if they're not, it's not good for the plant, and it's just making more work for you. So get them sharpened or purchase a new blade or, you know, whatever it is. They're very available these days at, you know, our higher quality garden centers and that sort of thing. So it pays in the end.
Pays in the end for sure. And then just knowing where to prune and how to prune. And I'm sure we'll probably get into a lot of that as through questions.
But yeah, sure.
Bill in Whitefish Bay has a question for us. I think that may be relating to pruning. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Good afternoon. Great timing on this. You answered the first of my two questions. Is it too late to prune? And it sounds like it's not. What I have is a burning bush hedge. Mm-hmm. For years, I've been meaning to prune it. It's gotten way too tall. I haven't done any pruning. So my question, can I cut it back by 2/3 or even a half? There, a question you may ask, there really isn't much growth down low. So it's into the dead wood down low. So how much can I cut it back?
And it's about, what, how many feet tall? 10 or so?
Probably 10 feet tall.
Okay.
I love it to be half that.
Right. Well, without seeing the plan, I'm not sure you could take it back by half, and you might want to consider doing it over a series of 2 or 3 years even. Typically, when Bernie Bush, with it said, Bernie Bush makes a great hedge because it is so amenable to cutting back hard and shearing constantly. And so typically when we have a really large shrub like that, and I've actually done some pruning on that exact plant, and they were like 15 feet tall, and we got them back to 8, but we did it over, I think, 3 seasons. And so we tried to only cut back into the newer growth. So, where you have a much more barren branch, and then it starts to rebranch, right, when it gets closer to the top, and then branches and branches again. Try to stay within that zone on your first pruning go around, so this season. And then what you'll find is what pruning does, it allows dormant buds below where you make the cuts to be able to grow. And so they, what we always say, break and send out new growth, which then will, so that'll ensue and grow this season. And now you'll have newer growth below the older growth that you cut back to. Now, next season, then you can cut back down to that growth, and then it'll do the same thing, and you can reduce it more slowly. So it's kind of one of those, you kind of have to judge for yourself how far that is. I don't know if it'll be 2 feet or a foot or whatever, but that would probably be the safer way.
Yeah.
You might get away with cutting it back really hard into that, coarser, older growth, but it'll also look kind of...
Look crappy.
Yeah. Right. Thanks, Larry. That's a better one. I was trying to think of an eloquent way to say that. But but you certainly can reduce that over time. And with that said, I've seen burning bush, actually at Chicago Botanic Garden, where they took some old plants, they cut them flush to the ground, and they did resprout and come back. But I'll be honest, they didn't look good for probably 3 years in that method. But they were at the point where they couldn't do anymore. They were really old plants with a real woody base. Now, so we're talking about burning bush, and that type of pruning we call heading back. Because it doesn't really respond well to the type of pruning that we do on probably, 75 to 90% of the shrubs, and we call that renewal pruning. And that's on shrubs that readily sucker back from the ground. So a classic one would be, say, a old common lilac or red twig dogwood is another great one, where, the best color on a red twig dogwood is on the new growth. And when they get old and woody, they start to lose that color. And so what the method is then, we cut back a quarter to a third or so of the growth every single year. So we go in and we cut out the oldest, heaviest canes, the one usually in bigger in diameter. Sometimes they have a darker color, especially with red twig dogwood. And we cut those flush to the ground. And what I mean as close to the soil as you can get them. Because if you leave 6 inches or a foot of a stub, as we call it, you'll get new growth off of the top of that. And that's not where you want it coming from. You want buds breaking from the crown of the plant, which then this season you'll get these nice new shoots coming up. They'll fill in. And then in essence, if you think about it, we said a quarter to a third, right? So in that shrub, then you would never have canes or the main branches older than 3 or 4 years old. And you'd think, oh, there'd be nothing left of it. Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
It keeps up the vigor in the plant, gets rid of all the oldest growth that is more prone to disease and canker diseases and such, and boring insects like the old stuff. And so you get rid of that. And the other added bonus then is that you maintain the shrub at a nice height.
Yeah.
So, say in a red twig dogwood, maybe it's, 6 feet in height or whatever, depending on the cultivar, of course. But it's also nice and full from top to bottom. And our caller Bill said, it's kind of bare at the base and you can see right through it. And then that won't be the case when you do this sort of renewal pruning. Most shrubs respond to that, not all of them. Burning bush is not one. Mm. Azaleas and rhododendrons, if you're lucky enough to be able to grow those, don't respond well to renewal pruning. You head them back like we described.
But lilac.
Lilac is perfect. An old lilac that gets 15 feet tall and you can walk right through it, where are all the flowers? Up 15 feet, you can see them, but you can't pick them. You can't smell them, like you would. If you renewal prune that on a normal basis. And now sometimes a shrub, You know, if you buy a new home or something, you have an old lilac, it's already way up there, and there's no renewal pruning that in the beginning. Basically, you take a chainsaw or a good saw and cut it flush to the ground. You'll sacrifice the blossoms for probably a couple years, but then you'll get some nice new growth, and then you start to get it into a cycle of regular renewal pruning, and then they're beautiful.
Yeah, and then so then about every 3-4 years, you've got a whole new plant.
Exactly, exactly. But it's something that we – and it's not overwhelming because you're only doing a quarter every season on all your plants, and it's better for the plant. It's easier for the gardener too, and works out really well.
So there you go, Bill. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions as we talk with our guest today, Jeff Epping from Old Brick Botanical Gardens. Carly in Waukesha will give you a chance. Hi, Carly.
Hi. I've got a question.
Sure.
We've got a lot of young mulberry trees. These are purple mulberry trees. We've got some that are very mature and really old and really tall. But I've got these young ones that I want to trim to try and keep within reach so we can harvest these berries easier. So I'm wondering if we killed them because we trimmed them when we were having the mild winter there, I don't think probably around January or so. I trimmed some of these young ones, my husband and I, and we just tried to keep them lower, you know, like we cut the ones that were going higher, the branches going higher. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, too, we used to have a tree that was a weeping mulberry. If we do the pruning right, can we create weeping mulberries trees out of these regular mulberry trees?
That's you're asking a lot there, Carly.
Well, typically, so a mulberry wants to be a big plant. It wants to be probably 30, 40 feet. And to keep it as a small plant is a fair amount of work. And then you always have to keep in mind that when you prune anything hard like that, you would also be pruning off flower buds for the following season. So any pruning you do, you'd want to do, early in the season and then maybe touch it up again mid-season before flower buds are starting to set. I'll be quite honest with you, mulberry is not one that we typically prune a lot because most people just don't want them. They're kind of an invasive species and that sort of thing. But, the fruit is good. I'm kind of a fruitaholic myself, and I munch on them from time to time. So I don't know that there are any dwarf cultivars of mulberry on the market. That might be something you hit the internet for and see. If there are, that would be the first thing to try to find rather than just trying to go with the seedlings that are popping up on you. Pruning it, I guess you would... If you look at, say, apple pruning, again, now they're getting into all dwarf cultivars, so they don't have as much pruning. But in days of old, a lot of times they'd have, large trees, and they'd want to keep them smaller so that people could still get ladders into them and pick the fruit. So I would find some information about pruning apples online and try to follow that method a little bit and see if you can make that work for you. As far as having it weep, that's not going to happen because that's a specific cultivar that has that habit. And so they're, they want to weep. You're just kind of working with them structurally pruning them. They never want to, they don't want to shoot for the sky, I guess, like your guys do. So that's sort of the deal on mulberry.
And if you go to the UW Extension Learning Store, just go put in UW Extension Learning Store. They have publications, and there's one I'm sure on pruning apple trees, other fruit trees.
Right, right.
And you can get that for free right off the internet. So there you go, Carly. Thank you so much for calling. I like Jeff's ideas. You may want to look at some new varieties, dwarfer varieties, if they're out there.
Yeah. Mulberry is not one that people typically have cultivated in a big way, at least not in this country. But there might be something out there. I'm always surprised every time I hit the Stark Brothers fruit catalog or something, all these crazy new varieties of this, that, and the other. It's kind of fun, actually.
Jeff Epping, our guest today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Dave Potratz, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Questions for him, we've been zeroing in on spring pruning because this is the time for it. And questions, maybe some other questions as well, give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Jan in Viroqua next. Jan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Jeff and Larry. Hi. I have two questions. The first one is, how long can I wait to prune my grapevines? Can I wait until the snow is off the ground, or do I have to plow through the snow to get to them? My second question, which is my main question, is I've got about 10 shrubs of different varieties that have been trench planted for 3 winters, and I can finally put them in their permanent location. Would they be more likely to do well if I prune them now before I transplanted them, or if I, you know, took them as is for the first year and transplanted them?
Mm-hmm. Typically when we transplant, the recommendation is not to prune until 1 year after establishment. However, if, you know, you're taking them from that trench and, you know, they kind of get beat up a little bit, certainly if any branches are broken or that sort of thing, you can prune them. And then you might even actually want to root prune them a little bit because that helps the root system develop to be a much denser root system. And most of the nurseries do that sort of root pruning between, you know, transplanting from seed beds to transplant beds out into the field or into a container. So that's
a really good idea. What's the best – how do you go about root pruning?
Well, you just kind of, you know, usually when – you know, some plants have a very dense root system and some plants have a very coarse and open. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, what you'll have when you dig them up. But, again, you're probably going to damage some in the process anyway. So just sort of trimming them back to, you know, I don't know, 12 inches or so depending on the plant. You know, and still keep a good amount of roots there, of course, but shortening those up. And then, of course, just like the tops of the plant, they will branch underground after the transplanting, and you'll have a little easier time transplanting them, too,
sure,
if you don't have super long roots. And then, of course, when you put them in the planting hole, you know, spread them out radially. And, you know, most root systems really do grow shallow, and I've seen people transplant, and they kind of bundle them together and, you know, and put them in the hole and then put all the, you know, soil around them. But no, you want them to branch out nicely, just like they would grow in nature. So that would, that should work well for you. And you had another, did you?
The question about grapes.
Oh, yeah. You know, grapes is sort of a fruit. You know, I'm not super knowledgeable in fruiting plants, but I would think that you, as long as they're still dormant, I think some of the grapes, if they're not completely hardy, and we had a brutal winter. It was a minus 28 or something. So it wouldn't be, and I know we're going to suffer some damage on some of the more tender plants that we have in the garden this year. And sometimes it's nice to see them start to break bud just a little bit so you can see what's dead and what's alive a little easier.
Yeah.
And grapes are a tough one sometimes to tell. And so maybe, you know, so I don't think you'll have an issue.
One of my favorite publications from UW Extension Learning Store is Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And that is a dandy, Jan. You know, you'll get a lot of good information about your grapevines if you go to that publication. Again, it's just go to the learningstore.uwex.edu or just type in UW Extension Learning Store. It's going to pop up.
Yeah, and it's nice hitting those publications too because they always keep up on the latest new varieties that are out there and which ones grow, you know, best in our location. I know, you know, like University of Minnesota too is great with all the fruit publications too, and they're even colder. So it's nice to hit the Wisconsin ones to see what is best. And your Viroqua, that's a beautiful area, a little colder than here, I would
maybe
think.
A little wetter right now too.
Right.
And Jay, well, one other thing which that you didn't mention, but I know you usually do, and that relates to making sure when you put that tree back in the ground that you don't put it deeper than what it was.
Absolutely. Yeah. So and I think that's, you know, that's been done for way too long, and now, especially trees, oftentimes the problems don't show up until 10, 15, 20 years later when the plant is really starting to get to the size you want it, and now it's getting all sorts of fungal crown rots and all these things that affect especially trees. And that's because the trunk of a tree is not adapted to be underground. If you go out into a forest, you can see how all the trees have these beautiful root flares to them, right, where they just kind of go from straight and flare off in a nice way. Whereas if you see a tree that looks like it's a telephone pole grown into the ground, you know that that was planted too deep because there is no root flare. And so when you go to plant them, it's usually pretty easy to see. It's like basically where the roots start breaking off from the main stems, and that's about the height you want them. And always the soil settles a little bit too. So being a little bit on the high side is actually better than being on the low side. When you plant anything, so. Just keep that in mind. That was a good, great point, Larry.
And Jan, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Christy in Potosi. Hi, Christy.
Good morning. My question might be a little slightly off topic because it's more about permanent pruning. I had my husband cut down a row of lilacs sometime last year. I just got tired of the suckers that they constantly put up into my perennial beds. And it was really too shady where they were growing. So are those suckers going to keep coming back? I didn't treat the, stumps in any way.
You could, what about black plastic or something over the top of them?
If that would be the organic means is to exclude light from all those suckers that are coming up. It's not going to happen in a couple months, though. It might be a year or maybe a little longer. So it's not a convenient way to do it, but it's the more organic way. Otherwise, there's herbicides out there that you could treat the basal stumps, and basically they use glyphosate, I know, and there's others too, but that's not one of my areas of expertise. But, oftentimes, when they're working on invasive species cutting down honeysuckle and buckthorn, they do it right after they cut them. I think they mix glyphosate with diesel fuel or some type of oil. Typically it's mixed with water, but in the winter when they do most of that work, it would freeze. So they mix it with an oil, and that's the carrier. And then it roots absorbs in, and then it ends up killing them. So that might be, that would be the alternate method to the organic means, but both should do it for you.
Yeah. Black plastic can work pretty well, but Jeff's right about the time it takes. It takes a little longer.
Yeah. But, it's probably, for Mother Nature, it's definitely the best way to do it. There's no doubt about it.
Thanks, Christy. Appreciate your call. Scott in Whitewater, it's your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello. I have another question about lilacs, but it's kind of the opposite. I have a couple beds that are 6 or 8 feet in diameter that are very mature, and I would like to get in, rejuvenate them, trim out some of the older, thicker wood, but I would also want to know if I can split those large bunches up and transplant them around the yard and kind of spread them out, if that's doable, and what time of the year would be best for doing that.
Sure. That typically does work. It is work, however. you need a good sharp shovel, and usually at the edges of the clumps is where you want to work from, because then you won't have the monster roots that you're going to have to try to cut through. It'll just be sort of trial and error, I think. Start out on those edges. You have to get enough roots there to transplant from the main stems. And of course, so a lot of people don't know that there's two lilacs that are really common out there. One is the Chinese lilac, which tends to be more like clump forming. It doesn't send out as many suckers. And then, the common lilac? Is that what I said?
No, you said Chinese.
Chinese, okay, good. Yeah, okay, then I was right. Second guess, what did I just say? So the Chinese more clump forming. And then there's the common lilac, which tends to, over time, get bigger from the edges, so it does sucker. It's not like crazy amount of suckers, of course, like some plants, but they do get bigger over time, where the Chinese kind of stays put. And then the other difference is when you cut the flowers on a common lilac and store them in a vase, they typically last nicely, a good amount of time, where the Chinese lilac don't. Yeah. So that's another way to tell. And the leaves are different. The leaves on Chinese are a little smaller, come to a sharper point, where the common lilac is more oval and a little more substance. But they're both nice, but that would be difficult to divide, if you will, the Chinese lilac,
yeah,
much more so than the common lilac.
There you go. Thank you so much for that question. And you can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org with your questions or photos. Let's go to Kathy in Union Grove next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Good. It's two questions, but they both are about the same. Like, is this a good time to prune? My dad has two rose bushes in his yard that did not get pruned back before winter hit. They've gone into, I guess you call it the rose hips. There's those little bulbs at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Is it time to cut them back? In my yard, in front of where there's a front porch, and people usually use, the young lady I spoke with before I got to you guys, said they're probably junipers. They've grown so much that they've overshadowed my perennials, and they didn't come in that great last year in my rock garden. So can I prune those now too, or not?
Sure. All right, starting off with the rose shrubs or bushes, the fact that they have hips makes me think they may be actually a hardier variety. Could be like some of our natives, like Rosa Carolina, the Carolina rose, or there's others. So those you don't necessarily have to cut back. A lot of times we cut back roses because that wood is dead.
Yeah.
And with the harsh winter like we've had this year, a typical, very popular rose right now is knockout rose, right?
Yeah.
We all know that because of the great disease resistance and such. But they're not super top hardy. Typically, they're root hardy, we say. And so even in a severe winter, we can cut them back to the ground if we had to, and they'll pop back. But we don't do that unless we have to. So when we do our shrub roses in the rose garden, we do wait for it to see those buds swell a little bit, and that, because then we can see what's dead and what's alive, and we cut back to outward facing buds that are alive on something like knockout or some of the other not so hardy shrub roses. Now, if it's a hardier rose, like rugosa rose, or the sea tomato rose, they sometimes call it, which is like a zone 2 plant, which I'm sure wouldn't be damaged at all this year, then we do the renewal pruning. And even when we do the other, you know, when we do the knockouts and such, we actually do some of that renewal pruning if we can too. If we don't, unless we're cutting them flat to the ground, then it doesn't matter. But if they've come through, you know, 3 years or so, we'll take out those really huge canes and then also cut the tops back to live growth. So that's kind of what you're,
that's what you're looking at there.
And then the next question
junipers.
Was about the junipers. Yeah. Junipers, yews, so the Japanese yew, even arborvitae, all those can be pruned back at this time of year, and you can touch them up even later in the season. But we never want to prune past, say, 1st of September, okay? Because anytime we prune, we're actually encouraging new growth to grow, because we remove what's called apical dominance, and we're allowing those buds to break, which I mentioned earlier. So if we do it too late in the season, then we encourage new growth, which can't harden off before it gets cold, and then they get frosted or browned, and they look crummy and damage the plant. So going back at this time, absolutely. So we try to, when we do our junipers, if they get to a state of maturity, we kind of want to just keep them where they're at, and same with the yews, is we go in every season, and we prune back the tips, but we do it back into the shrub to like a side branch. Okay, so we don't just go around and cut the tip of everything off. We try to, when we go in, we remove either whole branches or side branches, and then what that does then is it encourages more buds to break back in there, which will grow this season, and then we can just again sort of get in the cycle where we're always pruning back the side branch, so nothing looks too stark and open. because there's always lots of branches in there. So it's a type of that heading back pruning, kind of similar with the burning bush, but now, of course, we're working with something evergreen. Without seeing your plant, it's hard to know how far you can go back. But with that said, junipers are super tough plants,
yes,
and that's why we like, they're super drought tolerant. They're very gardener friendly, let's put it that way, because once they get going, they're happy in our climate. So you can be a little harsher with them typically, and they're not gonna be too fussy and and show the wear for it. And you know, if you haven't done it for a while and now you're looking at going back 3 feet,
I think she wants to get rid of some of the shade that they're putting on our rose bushes.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's a foot or 3 feet, but doing a little at a time is always the safer way. But like I say, with that plant, you're probably okay to be a little more harsh.
Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate your call. And we had a couple of photos from Karen. She recently discovered that critters had chewed off the bark, the whole circumference of her flowering crab tree. And she shows a picture of it. Man, it is bare for
about
a... She
shows one picture in full glorious bloom, probably last season. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
And now we have about a foot.
It's surrounded by snow, and the tree is probably only about 2 to 3 inches in diameter, so it's still young, and the bark is nice and succulent and tender. And what does that are voles. And voles are what they call meadow mice. It's an imported little rodent, and they get hungry in our winters, but they work underneath that snow line. You can see it was probably covered with snow, and then the snow melted away, and now we have this pure white underbark.
Barkless
all the way around. And sadly, that tree is done, because there is, unless you were to do an elaborate like bridge graft or something, which really wouldn't be worth the effort, you just have to replant. And that makes me sick, because that is not foreign to me. We've had that happen at Olbrich when we thought we were out of that stage. Because, you know, as they get older, then they develop nice thick bark that, you know, starts to peel, and then they're out. Then typically they're not in danger of that. So what we do when we plant crab apples, even cherries, any of those younger plants, we do put a little shield, a little cone of hardware cloth around, probably going up at least 2 feet, not maybe even 30 inches or 3 feet. Because if the snow gets above that fence, then they can still get at it. And we leave that on for, you know, until that tree barks up thicker. Just be careful that you, as the tree grows, you might have to make that cylinder a little bigger, because you don't want that to restrict the growth of the tree. So that's sad, but...
Sad, but true.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately.
That's gardening, unfortunately.
Yeah. Karen in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I've got a problem for the last few years where a Russian sage that's not wanted a garden stoop into the house, and it's growing between the stoop and the foundation of the house.
And she wants it gone.
I want it gone, yes.
It's amazing, isn't it, how plants can survive in the nastiest conditions?
And Russian sage is definitely one of the most drought-tolerant perennials we have, and why a lot of people like it where they planted it. Yours probably seeded in, which isn't completely, it's not super common, but it definitely happens. So like Larry mentioned earlier, you could kind of cover it with something opaque, some black plastic, something like that, and put a pot over it and put some flowers in that pot or something. Mm-hmm. Make it look attractive for a little while until it completely dies. Or the other option is let it start growing in the spring, let it get up to about a foot tall or so, and then you would treat it with Roundup or glyphosate, and that would take care of it.
Yeah. There you go, Karen. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bill in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hey, thank you very much. I just wanted to say before I ask my question that we were out at Olbrich earlier in the week looking at the Tessera, I think, exhibit. It was actually kind of cool. Yeah. And the glass house is great.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I didn't even pay him for that comment.
Is it too late to prune oaks yet?
No, I would. In fact, we had the forestry department over to Ulbrich yesterday, walked through our whole collection, and they said they're going to start early next week, and they're going to focus on the elms and oaks first. So they want to get them out of the way. So you have a good week at least, but definitely don't wait too long.
Yeah. There you go, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, before I forget about it, I know Aaron Presley is hosting a trip to St. Louis, and you and I were talking about it before the show, and I know one of the stops is the Missouri Botanical Garden, which I really love. I've spent a lot of time there.
It's a fantastic garden. And so she's taking a busload down, so I don't know, 20, 25, depending on, you know, how many we can get to go, but it's a fantastic trip. And I did this trip probably, must be 10 years ago now, and exact same time of year, and we got to the Botanic Garden there, and all the azaleas were in bloom, tulips everywhere, the flowering dogwoods, which they have, are so gorgeous. They're going to the Shaw Arboretum, which is the arboretum of the Missouri Botanic Garden. She lined up a bunch of private gardens. They're going to some nice little nurseries, specialty nurseries. And so it's a short trip, but I think the 23rd through the 27th of April. And we're hoping we need a couple more to sign up. And so I think the deadline's coming up on the March 22nd or so, so about another 10 days. So if you're at all interested in seeing green and smelling flowers and just having a great time, and Erin's been on the show, and if any of you have heard her, she's a
wonderful
delight, and she'll make it fun. I have no doubt about that. And she'll give you all the tips and tricks of gardening along the way, I'm sure. So that'll be a great trip.
So it's a bus trip and overnight someplace?
Yep, it's right in St. Louis. So hit our website. We also, I think it's on our Facebook page, I was told. So either of those places, they have all the details. And I wish I were going myself, to be honest.
And to be honest, I wish I was too, because it'd be fun to spend a couple of days with Aaron. That would be fun in and of itself.
Absolutely.
She's great.
So I hope we get a whole bunch of people.
So go to the website at Ulbrich Botanical Gardens or the Facebook page, and you can sign up there, or at least give some more
details. Oh yeah, I'll give you all the information you need. So all good.
All right, Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Ulbrich Botanical Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at spring pruning today and probably a few other things with our guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Ulbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Questions for him, number 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Christine in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, thank you for listening.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have what was a small shrub back in the 70s. It's now 6 feet tall.
You poor thing.
Unfortunately, this was my parents' house, and they got to the point they couldn't handle it.
Okay.
Now I live here, and I don't even know what it is. It has leaves that are pointed that don't fall off until about January. It also grows a cluster of small, very dark purple berries, which the birds love. Right now, it's full of berries.
It might be a viburnum of some sort. It's that you're putting me on the spot on this one, I'll tell you. And plus, you're in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, which is different.
You know, I have spent a fair amount of time out on the East Coast and all the wonderful gardens in and around Pennsylvania, especially Philadelphia and such. And you have the Phipps Conservatory. So, yeah, there's lots of – I would call your local botanic garden. If you could send a picture to anyone – and, you know, it probably won't be us, but to somebody at one of those botanic gardens in and around you, I'm sure they could easily identify. We get stuff like that all the time. Or somebody will get an email and say, hey, can you just text it to us if you don't want to fool around with getting it even on an email. And so we do that. And 99% of the time we have enough resources, we figure it out. But without seeing it, that's a pretty tough one.
Guess though.
Sorry, Christine.
Yeah, but not a bad guess.
I would think, you know, the viburnums typically have purple fruit, and There's a great many different possibilities.
And you already have the berries mm-hmm. showing. So get a photo of the berries and the leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
And
for us, we have one of the viburnums called Allegheny Service Bear, Allegheny viburnum. Holds on to its foliage through most of the winter, and then they drop off when the new leaves come out, and it has a nice purple fruit. That could possibly be it. But it's hard to say without a photo.
So there you go, Christine. Hey, thank you for listening. Appreciate your call. we will turn to another caller. This is Nancy, and she's in Wisconsin, Toma, Wisconsin. Hi, Nancy.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for this program and especially today's discussion. I have a maple tree that the leader broke off, that the main trunk going up through the middle of the tree has broken off.
Mm-hmm.
We are not going to be able to get at it to do something with it for perhaps another month. I'm afraid that that's going to be too late. Do I need to wait until next winter and then prune that broken leader off? How should I handle that? And also, there's a branch that grows up alongside the leader. Now, it is actually making the whole tree look top-heavy because it's so much longer, not top-heavy, but side-heavy because it's so much longer than all the other branches. Should I prune that one back so that the whole tree is more evenly shaped?
Sounds like that one's becoming the leader.
Yeah. Did this just happen, though? Did it just break recently this winter?
It broke. Yes, it did. I think it was last fall. It broke off.
And is this a mature tree? Or?
I'd say it's between 30 and 40 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So typically when tree, we always try to keep a central leader on a shade tree as long as possible. But when they start to reach maturity, then oftentimes that doesn't happen anymore. Think about a sugar maple, right?
Yeah.
Or an oak tree, you know, as young, we can keep a nice leader on, and then look at an old bur oak or white oak or sugar maple. There's no leader existing anymore. So they do kind of get rid of that sort of thing or just grow out of that at some point. In your case, without seeing it, it certainly wouldn't hurt to head back that sort of side branch or that secondary leader or secondary sort of tree that's making the tree look not as aesthetically balanced as you'd like it to. More than likely, you'll get a new leader start to form or at least new branches start near where you make your cut when you clean up that broken leader, and then you'll just have to work with it over the next few years. I'm guessing that it won't reform the same look as it had before because of the damage. But certainly you work with it. And, a lot of times, you don't just, obviously you know this, but you don't just prune it anything once. You're working with it over time. And trees, we don't make as drastic cuts on a tree as we're going along and training it, or if there's damage and we think about, okay, we'll do this year, we'll see how it responds, we'll work with what happens the next year and work with it for many years. And so I think you have that opportunity available to you with your maple.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy. Appreciate the call. Amanda emailed to say she's heard a few callers reference invasive species they're maintaining, and she mentions burning bush and mulberry. And wanted to remind people to please be aware that these species should not be maintained. And Wisconsin even has a law to that effect, NR40.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although there isn't there a burning bush that is not invasive, or am I mistaken on that?
Well, there's a native one called Eastern Wahoo. Which is
I knew there was one.
Euonymus americanus. Oh, anyway, yeah, there. Yeah, so oftentimes many invasive species also have their counterparts that are native. So you have choices. But that's a good point. And our friends over at the DNR, who we work with closely on on invasive species awareness and that sort of thing. So, no, that's a good point. It's my understanding that it is not necessarily illegal to possess some of the plants on the list if you already have them existing. Maybe some are and some aren't. But I know that there's not much of an active program to knock on people's door and say, hey, you gotta cut that down. But we're really trying to educate people and make them understand why it's important that we control these plants. So when we talked about burning bush or barberry, we've removed those all from Old Brick. When there is something that comes up, we do remove it. But sometimes when we like to, we're always in communication with the DNR and sometimes they say, no, please keep it. But use it as an educational tool, get a label on it that's set so people know what it is. Because a lot of times, somebody buys a new home or something and they're not, necessarily gardeners. They have a lot of these plants in their landscape and they have no idea that it shouldn't necessarily be there. So, we sometimes just kind of educate. And then if it produces fruit, we cut that fruit off in the fall and get rid of it.
So it doesn't spread.
Yeah, so the birds don't spread around or whatever it is. Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you.
Kurt in Richland Center, your turn, Kurt. Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm just driving. I live up in Brownsville. I'm just driving through Richland Center. But I had a question about maple trees. We've got a bunch of silver maples and then a couple of red maples. And, we'd like to replant some more of the red maples. And when they drop their seeds, those little propellers come down. Well, I've got silver maples everywhere. And, but I don't have one red maple that will take seed, and I'm just wondering: can you grow them from the seed, or what's the deal on that?
Yeah, you certainly can, but it's something that you have to put some time and effort into. Most of our trees in northern climates have a dormancy requirement, so they have to have what we call cold stratification. Which is mimicking winter, basically. Oftentimes you would put them in moist peat moss after you collect the seed in the fall, or sand that get most of the moisture out. You put it in the refrigerator for the winter. Or you could sow it right at that point and put it in like a cold frame, but you got to keep rodents out of it. So you always put some like screening over it or something. And then they should sprout the next season. Now, if you're just hoping they kind of do their thing in Mother Nature and then you just kind of pluck them out, the fact that you have silver maple and and red, that would be tough to even discern which is which. And interestingly, silver maple and red maple actually cross. And so many of our newer hybrid maples are actually crosses with red maple and silver maple. And they've made selections for those that have a good habit. They have a good structure to them because, silver maple is infamous for the problems that you have with them, with the bad crotch angles they form and then splitting wood and all that. So they're a good tree where you don't have many other choices. Get out into the Dakotas or something, any tree is a good tree. And that's where a lot of those tougher species are grown here. Most of the silver maples we see out in wet areas in sort of on the edge of wetlands and that sort of thing, because it is a native tree, so it's not without merit for sure, but you might be better off buying some red maple seed saplings or something. I know I think the DNR has programs, and there's nurseries out there that specialize in just selling little whips, bare root, and I think you'll save yourself a lot of time and effort, but everybody needs a hobby. So if you want to do that, just do a little research. There's great books out there that tell you exact requirements. Come over to Old Brick if you're in the area, and you can they can give you a little hand on finding that information as well.
Yeah, for sure. I would take your advice.
Buy the little guys that are like a buck a piece or something.
I tell you, my neighbor has the silver maple, unfortunately, and. Man, right in my flower beds every year. And boy, you want to be right on top of them, because if they last a year or two, they're a big pain.
Many of the elms are the same way too, especially the hybrid elms. They germinate like weeds everywhere.
What's better for an old flowering almond, renewal or heading back pruning or something else?
Probably be more of a heading back. Yeah, they don't throw out a lot of suckers like some of our other shrubs. So it's probably be in that vein, almost more like a tree type of pruning than it would be a shrub.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. Well, our guest today is Jeff Epping, and Jeff was reminding us about a trip Erin Presley is taking. She's hosting a trip on behalf, I guess, of the Olbrich Botanical Gardens.
Yep, that's right.
A trip to St. Louis, a bus trip for a couple of days to spend a little bit of time at the Missouri Botanical Garden and some other places. It sounds like a lot of fun. She would be a lot of fun to go on a trip with for sure, because she's a great talker, and she's always one of those folks that you enjoy spending time with, and you're going to enjoy spending a lot of time, I'm sure, at the Missouri Botanical Gardens and some other places as well. So go to the website at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens or on their Facebook page, and you can see how to sign up. Our guest today is Jeff Epping. He is Director of Horticulture at the Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're talking spring pruning today. That's what we've zeroed in on a bit with our guest, Jeff Epping. He's Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. And it's always great to have Jeff come by, and certainly thank you so much for listening in. Questions? We have one open line at 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll go right back to the phones. Holly in Newburg up next. Hi, Holly. Thank you for waiting.
Yes, thanks for having me. I was hoping to try to find one solution for two problems. I have blue hydrangeas that I planted probably 7 years ago, and they never come out blue. They're pink, dark pink.
Sure.
They need to be in more acidic soil, I know that. Mm-hmm. And they're just not in a great place. I also have two blueberry bushes that are about 3 years old. This should be the fourth season. And they're just not growing as well as I would have expected them to. Where I have them, they're in separate places. So I made myself a new bed. I pulled some, you know, bushes out that I had that were just a mess. So I made a new bed, and I was hoping that because they both need to be in relatively acidic soil, that I could plant them together. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I would think that would be a great idea.
Yeah.
Oftentimes people, they make a special sort of bed for their ericaceous plants, which are basically acid-loving plants. So blueberries are definitely in that realm. And then they'll amend that bed. They kind of usually work in like peat moss or something like that, and maybe some sulfur or aluminum sulfate or something to keep the pH lower. And of course, blue hydrangeas, as you pointed out, are pink hydrangeas when we put them in our normal soil, because our soils tend to be very alkaline, with, you know, limestone as a bedrock. That's pretty common, at least in this part of the state. Now, if you get up farther north, then soils get a little more acid. But anyway, I think that would,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, work really well.
Good luck with that, Holly. Let us know. I want to know.
Yeah, so you can have beautiful flowers, and you can eat some nice fruit all together. Perfect.
Thanks again for calling, John in New Berlin. It's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for letting me on your show.
Sure.
I've got some upright arborvitaes in the backyard. It's a hedge, and they're absolutely beautiful, but they're way too tall. They're about 12 feet. I've got to take them down to around 7 to 8. I've done some Google research, and everybody says don't do that. So, thought I'd check with you guys and see if I can do it, and if so, what's the trick in getting it done right?
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, I've seen arborvitae hedges maintained at about 8 feet for many, many years. Again, Chicago Botanic Garden has a beautiful hedge of that sort. So the danger with doing that is when you remove the leader, like you'll have to do, the main stem or trunk, you'll get all sorts of secondary leaders, right? And so you'll want to shorten those up on a regular basis, because arborvitae will catch a ton of snow in the winter, And if we get a bad winter with heavy, wet snow, it'll start tearing branches right off that plant if they're not strong. Well, to make them stronger, then always head back all those side branches. And you're going to get, when you cut that leader off, you're going to get all sorts of new ones come fighting to be the king of the hedge there. So yeah, that'll just be an annual thing, which you'll have to do. And but it's certainly doable. In fact, at Olbrich, the arborvitae hedge that creates the courtyard and the rose garden around our nice tower there, we used a cultivar called Wintergreen, which tends to form a very good central leader. So all of those have just one stem to them, but they want to be, 40 feet tall. We want them to be about 20 or 50, 15, maybe 18, whatever it is. And so we did just that. But we topped them right when they reached that point. And now we get up there every year and thin all those multiple shoots that come out every season. Because if we don't, one, they'll keep reaching for the sky, and then they'll form this little nest up there that will catch the snow, and then we'll start getting damage. So it's certainly doable. Probably would have been better if you would have, and when they got to 8 feet tall, at that point, tried to keep it there. But 4 feet off the top, probably not a big deal. You could also maybe do it in two stages where you could maybe take 2 feet this year and 2 feet in another year or two could be another way. But again, arborvitae is pretty good.
I'd probably whack 4 feet off.
There you go. Do it.
But remember, you're going to be busy every year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we knew that too on our hedge because I don't really want to do this, but we didn't want the look of something taller than the tower railing, if you will. If you come out, it'll make perfect sense to you. But yep.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Dave and Broadhead, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate your call.
Have a question. I've got a peach tree that's about 4 years old, and it's, up until last year, it was producing peaches like crazy. Last year, not very many. But it's got cracks in the bark and kind of cracks around some of the main branches that come up that ooze out a kind of sap. And I'm just wondering, is the tree on the way out, or is there anything I'm doing wrong, or should I do something different with it?
Well, peach trees are probably the least hardy fruit tree we could possibly grow in Wisconsin and still get away with it. And some years, you'll do okay. I suspect that this winter probably killed all the flowers on most, probably every peach. I can't imagine there's any that are hardy enough to withstand that. Flower buds are typically less hardy than vegetative buds. On a peach tree, I would just prune, minimally prune, because one, they're not really happy here with our cold. Probably what's happened also, you mentioned the cracks with the ooze coming out. They probably suffered from the cold. Sun scald on the trunk a couple years ago, and then had some death right under the bark. It's not always real evident. Also, prunus, whether they be plums or peaches, tend to be very prone to viruses, bacterial diseases, fungal diseases, and that ooze, I'm guessing, is from one of those diseases. Probably, I think that one would be bacterial. So you might cut your losses, and if you want, and I don't know what cultivar you have. There's one called Reliance.
You know what color?
A couple other.
I wish I knew which cultivar it was, but I can't remember anymore.
Yeah. So there are a couple real hardy ones. Maybe one's Contender. Because I don't grow them because I just buy mine at the local fruit stand.
They're here and gone. As I was listening to you talk, Dave, I was thinking, man, is he lucky to have had two or three years of peaches.
Right. And, you might have a couple mild winters and get away with it really nicely. So, everybody needs a hobby. So planting trees is a good one. It supports us in the nursery industry.
There you go, Dave. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Richard in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Richard.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a native garden, a Wisconsin native plants, and I'm interested in attracting more butterflies and moths. So I'm starting from seed a hop tree to attract the tiger swallowtail, and I'm thinking of getting what's that fall? Oh boy, there goes my mind, my old mind here.
witch hazel.
Yeah, witch hazel, yeah. And I'll probably get a seedling this spring for that. So the problem is I have a very small garden, and I'm wondering, can I keep these pruned, say, 4 feet each? And if so, and they would look pretty, and would they still bloom, especially the fall-blooming one? And then if they could be pruned, when would I prune them? How would I prune them?
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering why do you want to keep them that small? I mean, a witch hazel, geez, I've seen old witch hazels 20, 25 feet tall and wide. And that's the thing that we often tell people about pruning is we want to prune with the plant. And if you plant a bur oak tree, you know, and want to keep it at 10 feet tall for the life, it's you're fighting an uphill battle. So oftentimes I tell people that, you know, plant selection is super important. So in the beginning, do the research, find plants that fit the space. And in your case, I don't know if, you know, can you relocate or plant these? Because you're starting out from scratch now. Can you plant them in a location that, that they can do their natural thing? And we just like to prune usually to just enhance the natural form. Now, we talked about pruning hedges and, you know, there's some specialty things, espalier, all those things. You know, we are doing a little more pruning than we would normally like. But anyway, keeping a witch hazel at 4 feet is going to be really hard.
Oh, man.
There are no dwarf witch hazels that I know of. And I know most of them that are hardy here. So that's just going to be a near impossibility.
You know, if you're trying to attract certain types of moths, there are other plants. You might go to the insect diagnostic lab. Just type in UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, and the guy there is PJ Leash, who I have on my show once in a while. And if you tell him, I'm trying to attract, and then whatever it is,
right?
Are there other things besides witch hazel, for example, that might attract them?
Right.
And I think you're going to be money ahead.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know if you've heard of the, he's an entomologist from the University of Delaware. His name is Doug Tallamy, and he's written a couple books, and he is an expert on caterpillars, attracting caterpillars of moths and butterflies and all the plants. I mean, they've done painstaking research where they count the number of insects on a plant all season long. I'm sure he has grad students doing that kind of stuff. But check out his book. I'm trying to think. It's Garden. I just had it on my desk this morning. I looked at it. Anyway, Doug Tallamy, Google it. He's got actually some great videos on YouTube of his lectures and that sort of thing. But it's really fun to listen to him, and
I've interviewed him.
Have you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah.
And his last name is spelled T-A-L-A.
I think it's two L's, maybe.
Two L's.
A-M-Y.
Yeah, T-A-L-L-A-M-Y.
Yeah, you Google it up, you'll find him. But great books that he has, and it's really he promotes gardening, you know, with wildlife. If we want birds, then we got to allow insects to chew on our plants a little bit, because birds need to eat.
Yeah.
So we just need to be a little more tolerant. And he has lists and lists of all the different plants and in the specific caterpillars that they support. So that'd be a good resource as well.
Doug Tallamy. There you go, Richard. Thank you so much for calling. And Steve in Rome, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
2 weeks ago, we had a heavy, wet snow here. It gathered on the tops of a bunch of pine trees, spindly pines I have, and bent them over. I was out of town for a week, so they were in that position for a week and went through the sub-zero freezing that happened after that. And now that it's melting, they're just all kind of hung over there, and I'm just wondering, is there anything I can do to straighten them? And if not, how do I prune them?
Mm-hmm.
I'd let them go for a while.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, as the sap starts flowing a little more, they may, you know, straighten up a little bit on their own. It doesn't sound like you didn't mention that they were broken, so that's the good news. If you were to sort of straighten them, I would definitely wait until, you know, late May, even June. You know, pines don't even get growing until usually mid-June. Sending out new candles and such, and if they're still bent, then you know, then you could probably stake them or something if you wanted to go through the trouble with that. But I wouldn't do anything for now. Let Mother Nature kind of see what she can do to help out, and then once the sap's flowing and the wood is much more flexible, see what you might do to straighten
them. Yeah, my backdoor neighbor had the same issue here a few years back, and you know what? They've straightened out over time.
Good.
Yeah. There you go, Steve. Thanks for calling. On to Carol in Boscobel. Hi, Carol.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I have a rhododendron bush, and I've had this thing for 6-7 years now. It does bloom, but it doesn't grow very much, and there's not a lot of blooms on it. My daughter got one the same kind. She lives in Onalaska, and she got hers a year later. Hers is absolutely huge. Am I doing something wrong, or what time should I be pruning this, or should I prune it?
Mm-hmm. More times than not, issues with a rhododendron or an azalea are related to the soil. And we mentioned earlier that they love acid soil. And when it's more alkaline than they like, sometimes they just don't grow much. If it's really more alkaline than they like, then you'll get what they call interveinal chlorosis, where you can see yellowing of the foliage. And it starts out sort of mottled, and then it gets worse as it goes, and sometimes even brown tips on the leaves because of it. You didn't mention that, but that may be the issue. Rhododendrons typically like, you know, a good amount of moisture during droughty periods and during the summer. So depending on, you know, your location versus your daughter's, I'm not sure how they do benefit from shade, especially during the winter months. So we do have a few rhododendrons growing around Olbrich, and those are a series out of Helsinki hybrids.
Oh.
Sweden, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Helsinki,
yeah.
And they are probably the hardiest group of rhododendrons that we can grow. Ed Haskett's at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the Arboretum Longenecker Gardens, is the one who kind of started testing those and found out that they do a nice job. And we were just commenting on those this morning at Olbrich at how good they look despite the horrible winter we had. But all of ours are sited on the north side of a building or a hedge of arborvitae or something where they get no sun during the winter. So they that's what they like. And then they benefit from the shade as well. They have big fat buds on them, but I'm not sure they're going to open because minus 28 might be a little too much for them. But so I would start with a pH test of your soil. And if that is alkaline, and, you know, we have a great testing labs here in Madison. Typically, you can send in samples, talk to your local extension agent. They can tell you how to do that or go online and figure that out. That would be the first place that I might start.
Yeah. There you go, Carol. Thank you so much for calling. And Joe in River Falls, your turn.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. So talking about, we've got a plum tree in the backyard that tends to, and I think it's supposed to be self-pollinating, but I'm not sure. But the branches tend to grow every which way, and so they start rubbing on themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is now or when would be a good time to trim some of that back, pruning and such?
Right, yeah. No, and that would be a good time for sure. And with trees, basically, we call oftentimes that structural pruning, where we space the branches out so none are rubbing against each other, because whenever they do in a wind or something, they'll open up a wound, which can allow, you know, disease and insects or something to get in there and cause problems. So we always look at the spacing from top to bottom throughout the tree and radially around. And so we don't ever want a branch on, like, you know, one side of the east side of the tree shooting through the middle of the plant to go back to the west side, which sounds kind of crazy, but it does happen, right? They kind of grow this way, that way. So you kind of, we always survey what we're doing, walk around the plant a few times, kind of see what's going on. The first thing you'd prune out would be like broken branches, or if you see like a branch that kind of may be diseased, get rid of that. Sterilize your pruners after you make a cut something out that you might suspect would be diseased. And then, you know, then just kind of just systematically go through the plant. If you get out those broken or crossing or diseased branches first, then you definitely want to get rid of those. Then you start on the other ones. Not the opposite, because they might take out something that you wish you wouldn't have if you did it that way. But yeah, on any fruit tree, you're trying to get a good amount of light into, you know, all parts of the plant, so it helps develop the fruit. And oftentimes on fruit trees, after we prune, we get what we call water sprouts, where these straight ones go shooting up towards the sky. Those we remove, and you might want to remove those even during the season if you get that response from the pruning you do now.
Yeah.
You do a little of that, actually. So, yeah, that's kind of the
That's the way to do it, Joe. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff, what should we be looking forward to seeing at the garden?
Yeah, well, right now we have a great art exhibit going on in the conservatory. I think one of our callers mentioned that. Mm-hmm. It's called Tessellation. So we worked with a local artist, and he actually two local artists. One does kaleidoscopes.
Yeah,
Robert Anderson. He's from the Sturgeon Bay area, and so we have several of those around. And then we also have these beautiful metalwork and artwork that that Peter Crisco did. He's the other artist. So you can enjoy that. Hit our website. It's got all that on there. There's also what we have called Garden to Glass, which is a fun little tour around the conservatory.
I like it.
And at the end, you make a little cocktail out of the things that you see and collect. And it's just a fun thing to do, especially now in the winter when it's so darn cold, and get into that beautiful tropical conservatory, you know, hang out in there and enjoy some of that. So there's always something going on at the garden, that's for sure. Just hit our website. It's all at olbrick.org.
And No Rhapsody in Bloom Gala.
No.
I always liked that.
I know. We'll have even better events. So we decided that we were going to try something different and do many smaller events, some family-friendly. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that should be that should be a good alternative.
Oh, yeah. There's always something up our special events person's sleeve, Missy. She's a good one.
Jeff Epping, our guest today. He is director of horticulture at Olbrick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have him come by and talk with us. Take a look at their website, and don't forget about that trip Aaron Presley's hosting. A trip to St. Louis coming up in toward the end of April, and you'll find out some more about that at the website as well. So just look ahead here. Monday, we're talking about bursitis with our regular physical therapist, how to deal with it. So I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening and for your calls, and please do stay with us, because right through the afternoon and evening, there's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.